I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer. I just wanted to let you know that this episode of Vermont Edition has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. One day after the mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, Vermont was shaken by news of its own. Jack Sawyer, an 18-year-old from Pulteney, was arrested after police learned that Sawyer had, quote, communicated his desire to cause mass casualties at the Fairhaven High School. At the time, Vermont Governor Phil Scott said the incident in Fairhaven, combined with the shooting in Florida, jolted him.
Especially after reading the affidavit and realizing that only by the grace of God and the courage of a young woman who spoke up did we avert a horrific outcome.
Remarkably swiftly, Vermont's gun laws were significantly changed. But the case against Jack Sawyer has also been changing. Originally charged with attempted murder, Sawyer's lawyers went to court, and the state Supreme Court ruled that he couldn't be held without bail and suggested that the charges might not hold up in court. The attempted murder charges were later dropped, and the bail went from $100,000 to $10,000. Sawyer was released on bail last week. Meanwhile, the legislature is looking at changing the state's domestic terrorism statutes to better account for a case like this. And they may look later at the definition of intent in state law. In a little while, we'll hear from Senator Dick Sears, ACLU attorney Chloe White, and Vermont Law School's Bobby Sand. But first, let's go through the timeline and the context here with 7 Days reporter Mark Davis. Mark, it's nice to have you back with us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So can you just remind us what exactly Sawyer was originally charged with?
4 felony counts, 3 counts of attempted murder, and 1 count of attempted aggravated assaults.
And at the time, did you think that those charges sounded severe compared to what the affidavit said, or did that seem like an appropriate charge?
So I think from the very beginning, a lot of lawyers I spoke to and people who are familiar with this looked at these charges and said there's no way they're going to stick long term, that while this was a sensational, alarming case, the facts weren't there to support it. That was from the very beginning.
And why didn't they stick?
Essentially because there was no evidence that Jack Sawyer made an attempt to do anything. If you think of attempted murder, say, as someone shoots someone and the victim lives, that's easy to understand. Jack Sawyer didn't come anywhere close to that. The ruling essentially was that he had maybe made some plans, but a plan is not an attempt.
So what is he charged with now?
He is down to 2 misdemeanor charges. One is criminal threatening. The other is carrying a dangerous weapon. Combined, those misdemeanors would carry a maximum of 3 years in prison. It'd be somewhat unusual to see heavy prison time for a misdemeanor charge. And like you said, he is out on bail.
Yeah, and that bail issue was a big one in the case and had a lot to do with whether or not what he was charged with was appropriate. I mean, normally a bail hearing doesn't really have any impact on the merits of the case, but in the Jack Sawyer case, this question about bail really did have to do with what he was charged with.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to understand it is we were sort of proceeding on parallel tracks. One was bail, the other was the validity of the charges themselves. However, at the end of the day, the standard for holding someone without bail and to see the charges continue is the same. And so when we got a ruling from the Supreme Court that said you can't hold him without bail, that was a huge signal that the charges themselves weren't going to be able to survive either.
So then bail was originally set at $100,000. Yeah. Why did it go down to $10,000?
The $100,000 was for the 4 underlying felonies. Once the felonies went away, it couldn't justify holding someone in such a heavy amount of bail. And so they were essentially forced to revise that bail amount downward to reflect less severe charges.
Jack Sawyer is 18 years old, and it doesn't look like he has a lot of independent means. Do you know who posted bail for him?
I don't. The assumption was always that his father was going to be the one to do that and that he was going to go live with his father, who's a Pulteney resident.
And do you know where Jack Sawyer is now?
I do not. What I can say to that is the plan all along had been for him to seek inpatient mental health treatment. That has been what lawyers had specified. I have not heard anything to suggest that they had deviated from that plan.
Yeah, and State's Attorney Rose Kennedy supported that idea of him getting treatment as well.
Yes, absolutely.
But you don't know yet whether the idea was that he would be able to receive treatment at Retreat, but there was a question of whether or not that would be available when he got out, and you don't know yet what.
And sort of the timeline as to when it would be available. Bed space can be a bit of a shifting landscape there. And of course, there's some HIPAA issues as well that they don't necessarily want to disclose where he is.
There were also conditions set for him when he posted bail. What are the conditions?
Essentially, 24-hour curfew to live with his father in Pulteney, and his father was supposed to be around him all the time. Another, I think, obvious condition was he was supposed to avoid Fairhaven, not just the school, but the community itself. So he was essentially supposed to be on lockdown one way or the other.
And not to possess firearms. I'm
sorry. Yes, that as well.
So when you look at all the twists and the turns in this case, how do you think of it as a reporter who follows this? Sort of a natural progression of a case, an example of prosecutorial overreach? I mean, where do you sort of come down on analysis on this?
I've explained it to people as procedurally this got very complicated, but legally it never really was. As I said from the beginning, a lot of people looked at this from day one and said these charges cannot stand. It is unusual. I think we've been in court a half dozen times. We've been to the Supreme Court and back down. That is very unusual, and I think it speaks to a desire, an obvious, understandable desire to not let him out, to not have to sort of face up to that. So yeah, this has been a very strange couple months. But again, from the very beginning, this case seemed pretty cut and dry to people who looked at it for the attempt portion.
Well, now the state legislature has been interested in looking at two different possibilities for changing state statutes and changing things that in another case like this might change the way the case goes. One of them is to look at changing the definitions of domestic terrorism and what's involved in that. And another one is to change the definition of attempt. And you talked earlier, Mark, about this idea of, you know, it didn't constitute what the state says is an actual attempt mm-hmm. at the crimes that he was charged with. But so the legislature might look at changing that. And then again, domestic terrorism, which is actually probably more likely to be impacted this year.
Yes, it's quite striking. This is not like this is an issue that was a hot button topic or any topic, frankly. This is very clearly motivated by one case, which I think
much
also,
like gun control.
Much like gun control. I think there are people who look at that and say it's somewhat concerning to have a potential legislation based on one case on an issue that we had not really given any thought to before. It's also a little unclear. I mean, it's moving very fast in Montpelier. If even the proposed new statutes would necessarily have been applicable to Mr. Sawyer here, and I think that's worth noting as well.
On domestic terrorism?
Yes. And in general, and the idea of looking at what constitutes an attempt in Vermont.
Mark, this case has really been a headline grabber. It has clearly affected how we think about state laws. I mean, as I said, the gun laws in Vermont were really this sort of push to have them changed, and the governor's change of heart were really started by this case with Jack Sawyer. So it's not only a case that's grabbed headlines, but it's really started to change the way we think of our state laws and our state culture. And then it also becomes confusing because people use it for their own political purposes. So are there things in this case that you feel like either are being misconstrued for political gain or that the general public sort of needs to be aware of as we move forward thinking about this?
I think there's a fundamental nuance that has been lost in both the coverage and the reaction in the Fairhaven community and in the legislature. And that was, we seem to have gotten to this point where we think he absolutely was going to go ahead and do this, that were it not for that intervention, this was going to happen. Now, there's reasons to think that. The journal entries that were found that in parts were incredibly chilling, and this was really scary stuff. However, you could also read some of these journal entries and some of his actions and see not someone who was absolutely going to do this, but a lost, confused 18-year-old kid who maybe at times was backing away from this plan. So one can certainly reasonably say he was going to do this, but one could also reasonably say, I'm not so sure. And yet both, I think, legally and politically, we've made this big leap that this was absolutely going to happen. And I think when you inject fear in a conversation, it can really change the dynamic.
So does that then change your thinking on the state laws changing around guns, around criminal attempt, around domestic terrorism, all focused on this one case that now, as you said, you know, depending on where you stand, could be read in different ways?
I certainly wouldn't have an opinion one way or the other on that proposed legislation. Again, I think there's always a broad concern when you do something in an emotional state in the days and weeks after something like this. A lot of people would say perhaps that's not the most ideal way in which to legislate.
That's Mark Davis, a reporter with 7 Days, who's been covering the Jack Sawyer case and all of the surrounding activity and responses. Mark, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
And joining us now is Bobby Sand, director of the Center for Justice Reform at Vermont Law School, also former longtime Windsor County State's attorney. Bobby Sand, nice to have you with us today.
Great to be here, Jane.
So you've been listening here in the studio as we're talking with Mark Davis. And, you know, I'm curious what you think, just sort of opening statements, if you will, about this case and all of the surrounding ideas and reactions that have really prompted some pretty big changes in state law.
So I think I'd make a two-part opening statement. One is to make clear there are really two types of attempt. There's a type of attempt where someone does the act but doesn't accomplish what they set out to do. So someone shoots at trying to kill another person and misses. or wounds but doesn't kill. That's a clear-cut kind of attempt. What we're really focusing on here is when someone takes steps toward that final act but doesn't actually begin the final act. And that's the more nuanced and difficult aspect. The second thing that I would say is...
And that's where we are now, you think, in that gray area of what we think attempt is and what we want it to be?
That's the gray area. How far along toward that final act must someone go before we can properly treat them as a criminal? The second issue is that I don't believe that there's a prosecutor in this state who wouldn't have tried to bring the most serious charges available under current Vermont law under this set of facts. So I have heard lots of people say, well, this was overcharging, and I don't think there's a prosecutor who would have done differently. The case has arguably pointed out a void or a deficiency in Vermont law, but that doesn't mean it was improperly charged.
Are you feeling some, not defensiveness necessarily, but feeling like you want to defend Rose Kennedy, the state's attorney, the Rutland state's attorney in this case, because she has gotten some pushback for those charges that some people said was an overreach? And you're saying, you know, were you in the same position? You might have done the same thing.
So exactly right. I mean, I think I probably was slightly on the more progressive side of the prosecutorial spectrum, and putting myself in her position, I think I would have done exactly the same thing.
Why? Knowing that they might not stick, why?
Well, first of all, that isn't the standard. The standard for filing is whether there's probable cause. There clearly was probable cause. The trial judge found that there was probable cause. It was a deeply concerning set of facts, and it was perfectly reasonable to bring serious charges that allowed the state to ask for the defendant to be held without bail. The fact that three justices of the Supreme Court subsequently, implicitly, if not explicitly, ruled that the charges can't stand doesn't mean the original charging decision by the prosecutor was inappropriate.
So it's sort of like go as hard as you can, and then if you can't make that, you know, stick, then you go with what you can do.
That's not an atypical approach to prosecution. I'm not saying that's always the approach, but that's not unusual, to bring the most serious charges supported by the facts and the law. And the law is not crystal clear. So in fairness, the Rutland County State's Attorney brought charges that seemed reasonably appropriate based on the facts and the law.
You know, what Jack Sawyer was charged with, these counts of attempted murder and first-degree murder, really serious charges, one that suggests that he could be held without bail, ones that could mean a life in prison. We went from there to misdemeanor charges, criminal threatening and carrying a dangerous weapon. Should there be something in between that somebody like this could be charged with?
So that's a question about what should the response be now, perhaps the legislative response. And there really, I think, are three options. One is to say the Vermont Supreme Court properly interpreted our attempt law and we don't need to make any change, that mere preparation should not be a crime. The second approach is largely what the House was looking at. How do we amend our attempt law? And the third approach is largely what the Senate was looking at. What substantive laws should be changed or added that in and of themselves should be treated as a crime separately and independently of whether we amend the attempt law?
Do you take a position on this personally or professionally, or do you sort of look at it from afar now? You could be an academic. You don't have to make a decision.
Maybe a little bit of both. And I should say any personal or any opinions expressed today are mine and not necessarily those of the Vermont Law School or the Center for Justice Reform. In my assessment, this case points out a gap in Vermont law that should be addressed. My personal preference is that we address it by amending existing laws or perhaps creating a new law, but leaving for a less emotional time, to echo what Mark was saying earlier, revisiting or adjusting the attempt statute. That's a complicated piece of legislation that has bearing on the entire criminal code. So maybe that should happen over the summer. But right now, the legislature focuses on specific substantive offenses.
Let's take a call here while we're talking about this. Elizabeth is on the line with us from Jericho. Hi, Elizabeth. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. I think there is a great deal of confusion. And the one of the problems is the difference in definition between the legal definition of attempt and what I believe is the mental health definition of attempt. If a patient comes to a mental health practitioner and says, "I'm going to kill my wife. I'm just so mad at her. She never straightens up the house." You delve a little farther. And what you delve into is what is called the plan. Well, are you serious about killing your wife? Have you? How are you going to do it? And if the person says, "Well, yeah, I have a gun and it's in the drawer and I've got the bullets and I'm going to shoot her when she walks in the door," that is it passes the test, what's called the Tarasoff decision, and you have to warn the people who are the intended targets. And if the person is threatening suicide, you have to, if there's room, in the hospital, you have to hospitalize the person perhaps against their will for up to 72 hours.
So Elizabeth, let me get you to a fine point here. Are you thinking that there needs to be a change in the legal definition of attempt, or are you just sort of pointing out the differences between a psychiatric evaluation and a court definition of attempt?
I'm saying until the doctors or mental health practitioners and the lawyers talk together and agree on where they can agree and where they can disagree, we will be at stalemate. People who are dangerous.
Elizabeth, I take your point, and it's an interesting one. And Bobby Sand, you said there are different ideas. For example, in between what you can charge someone with and what they would actually be convicted of, you know, that somebody might charge an individual with something, even knowing that those charges may not actually result in a conviction at the end of the process. There are also differences in what constitutes attempt, whether it's a legal definition or a medical definition or a societal definition, and at some point, don't we all need to sort of come to a consensus?
So part of what we have seen in this case is that the legislature didn't define what it meant by attempt.
And when? You mean way back when?
Ever. And so that is actually a representative of a large part of our criminal code, that terms aren't defined. When the policymaking body, the legislative body, fails to define a term in criminal law, it's left up to the courts to offer that definition. So we've had 100-plus years of the Supreme Court deciding what attempt means. And now we have an invitation in the Sawyer case, in the final paragraph of the opinion, inviting the legislature to revisit. The bigger, broader issue is because we largely have an archaic criminal code throughout the criminal laws, there are instances where terms are not defined, and that creates uncertainty and confusion. So one of my hopes is that if there are changes made this legislative session, that there are definitions added to the statutes so that we are not relying on judges down the road defining for the legislature what the legislature means by its new laws.
Well, speaking of that, coming right up, we're going to talk with a legislator about what changes might be coming and where things stand with that right now, at least in the Senate. We're talking about the case against Jack Sawyer and how it is really spurring people to make some changes in state law and think about what we mean by attempt, what we think we mean by attempt, and what the knock-on effects of changing the law might be. And we're getting some thoughtful responses from listeners who are trying to think about what this case means in the broader context. Dave says, "We don't need new thought crime laws. We need better police procedures. When the FBI finds out a potential attack like this, they send in an undercover agent to set up a sting operation on the suspect, usually by getting him to build an inert bomb. They then test and arrest him after he's actually made an attempt to commit a crime by attempting to set off the bomb. Something like that should have been done in this case." Ray says, it does raise some interesting, complex, and tricky questions about what is to be done when circumstances like this come to light. On the one hand, saying something does not mean that one is going to carry out an action. But on the other hand, we've seen times when individuals have very much exhibited the same sorts of words or behaviors before perpetrating some sort of horrific attack, and then a subsequent criticism of law enforcement for not acting upon what knowledge like that they had. And Mark says, even if no charges are ever formalized against Sawyer by the state, I'm pretty sure he and his family are going to pay a hefty price for the rest of his life. How will he ever attend high school again? Will any college ever accept him as a student? What employer is going to hire him? There will always be a black cloud over this person. I don't see how he could ever successfully live in Vermont long term at this point. Let's turn now to questions about legal definitions and how they might change. Joining us on the line is Bennington State Senator Dick Sears. Senator Sears, nice to talk with you again. Thanks for being here.
Nice to talk with you again, too.
So where does the legislature stand now in changing? There are two questions, the domestic terrorism statute and the attempt law. So talk to me first about what the Senate's been working on with domestic terrorism.
Well, the domestic terrorism bill already passed the Senate. It's over in the House now. And that bill creates a new crime of domestic terrorism. It's a fairly simple, short bill that someone who someone who is engaging in or taking substantial steps to commit a violation of the criminal laws with the intent to cause death or serious bodily injury to multiple people or threaten any civilian population with mass destruction, mass killing, or kidnapping. And a substantial step shall mean conduct that's strongly corroborative of the actor's intent to complete the commission of the offense. And a person who does this knowingly and willfully would face a 20-year prison sentence or $50,000 fine or both. And if the act takes effect on passage, that's basically what the criminal domestic terrorism bill is. We felt that it was a short-term fix that would have, or could, I shouldn't say would have, could have applied to a situation similar to the one we saw in Fairhaven if the prosecutor were able to prove that was his intent. Again, I would agree. I heard a few of the comments, and I would agree with the comments that just thinking something should not be against the law or even putting it down on paper. It's actual intent to carry out the act.
So do you feel, Senator Sears, that this is a reaction directly related to the Jack Sawyer case, or did this case highlight an oversight in our laws or
well,
an
I think
absence?
It certainly highlighted a place where Vermont law was lacking to deal with cases that might arise in the future. I caution everybody that this can't be retroactive, so it's certainly not going to be retroactive unless Mr. Sawyer, re-engaged his plan and started to take steps to carry out that plan. But if someone were to do this in the future, this act could apply to them. I mean, I think when we passed S-221, the Extreme Risk Protection Bill, we never anticipated it would be used so quickly after the governor signed it. And so I'm not sure, when or if this bill will be used, but it would be something that could fill that gap.
What about the idea of changing the statute in terms of what a definition of attempt is?
Well, I think it's a pretty easy thing to say. And then when you sit down and start to look at the case law that's developed since 1906, when the Supreme Court first tackled attempts, I think you realize it's a little more complex and you don't want to upset 100 years of Vermont case law in responding to one case. So our position, the Senate Judiciary Committee as well as the Senate, was that we should take a look at attempts over the summer and have reestablish what was known as the Sentencing Commission that is part of a bill, and asking them to take a look at the attempt statute.
Do you have thoughts already, you know, thinking about this on where that line should be between attempt and thought?
Well, I think you need to take substantial steps. It can't be just writing something down in a journal or even starting a novel. It's got to be substantial steps. And the question becomes, what are substantial steps? And I think House Judiciary Committee has been working on further clarifying substantial steps. And I think that what we'll end up with, at least in the bill regarding domestic terrorism, is a better definition of substantial steps.
Well, I look forward to hearing more about what this entails as we move forward. That's Bennington Senator Dick Sears. Senator Sears, thanks very much for talking with
us
today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
We are talking about the case against Jack Sawyer and then some of the knock-on effects, some of the ways the state is thinking about changing its laws. And, of course, laws reflect society. Laws reflect who we are, who we want to be, and who we think we should be charging for what. So, Bobby Sand, this idea of changing the intent or attempt laws, it sounds like Senator Sears is echoing what you were hoping for, that this should be something that is more thought out than just a knee-jerk reaction in the last few weeks of the session.
I wouldn't characterize what the House has been doing as a knee-jerk reaction, but it is a very emotional time, and the proposal that the Senate Judiciary Committee has made to defer that to consideration by this revived body called the Vermont Sentencing Commission makes a lot of sense. Senator Sears didn't mention two other changes that the Senate made that are relevant. One is that they added to the definition of what is a weapon of mass destruction, firearms possessed with the intent to inflict injury or death on multiple persons. That creates another option for prosecutors. They also amended our carrying a dangerous weapon law to expand it to people who carry or possess a dangerous weapon with the intent to injure another. And they added an enhancement provision for instances where someone intended to injure multiple people. Mm. So one of the issues that has arisen here is that the prosecutor didn't have appropriate available options. The Senate version creates some options. Whether that will survive review by the House, we'll see.
Yes, it still needs to go through the House and get the governor's signature before it should become law. But, you know, speaking of changing laws, this is something that obviously concerns many people and needs to be thought out. And joining us on the line now is Chloe White, who is policy director for the ACLU of Vermont. Hello, Chloe. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, thanks for having me, Jane.
So as we were just talking about the definition of domestic terrorism now in front of the House, is that something that change to the law, something that you approve of?
I can't say that we approve of it. We certainly, we think the attempt to change the attempt statute, we really strongly oppose. We think, as Senator Sears said, as others have said, that really taking this step so quickly, in response to an incident is just not it's not really a great idea. We're also worried about the kind of conduct sweep up and worried that it will just lead to increased punishment and increased sentences, something that, as a state we've been working towards criminal justice reform and looking at how, increased lengthier sentences and harsher punishment actually don't do anything to, to enhance our society or to decrease recidivism. So we're firmly opposed to the attempt statute. We like that the domestic terrorism legislation is narrower than the attempt statute in that it addresses a smaller bodies of crime. I think we're not sure that we do see a gap in our current law, that there can't be other ways to charge this or to look at this.
So, in other words, do you think that the charges that Jack Sawyer now faces are appropriate to what he's being accused of doing?
I'm sorry, as the ACLU is not involved in the Sawyer case, I can't comment on the case. I don't think it's appropriate for me to comment on the case directly. I think there are There are choices to be made about what to charge someone with, but it's just not, that's not our bailiwick at the moment.
But in other words, you don't think that it's that the state law necessarily has gaps that need to be changed or accounted for?
We that's not something that we see. And we're also worried about the really harsh punishment here. If you look, you know, domestic terrorism under this bill is shall be imprisoned for not more than 20 years. So if someone engages in, engages to commit a violation of criminal laws of the state to threaten any civilian population. So what about a kid calling in a bomb threat to his school because he wants to get out of a test that day? That is violating criminal law of the state. That's criminal threatening. And that's threatening a population with mass destruction. Should that kid be facing a 20-year sentence or $50,000 in fines for a bomb threat? Should a threat, a bomb threat like that, be something that that is actually charged with something so serious?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to think about it. That's Chloe White, Policy Director for ACLU of Vermont. Chloe, thank you very much for raising your concerns. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Bobby Sand, I want to give you the last word on that because, you know, what Chloe White is bringing up are that, you know, we may change laws based on what we think is a gap in one specific case, but these laws will then apply not to that case, but to all cases in the future, and we better know what we think might happen.
That's exactly why it makes sense to delay deciding about the attempt law, because the attempt law is in the general provision section and applies to the entire criminal code. And it makes more sense, in my judgment, to focus on specific substantive crimes and look at how they could be adjusted to provide more reasonable options for prosecutors.
Moving forward, would you want to be involved as somebody who has experience as both a prosecutor and now director of the Center for Justice Reform in the wording of these law changes, these statute changes?
What I will say is that the domestic terrorism law proposed has some very unusual wording components. And so I know there is not a lot of time left before the end of the session, but I'm not shy about weighing in about my concerns.
That's Bobby Sand, as I said, director of the Center for Justice Reform at Vermont Law School. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.